Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. America leads the world in the number of people it incarcerates. The rate of recidivism shows that the transition back to the community is often unsuccessful. When that became apparent to a local businessman, he went to work to do something about that. Danny Ludeman is the former CEO of Wells Fargo Advisors. He's the founder of Concordance Academy, whose purpose is to help incarcerated adults successfully adjust to life after prison. He joins me in studio, as does St. Louis County Executive Steve Stenger. St. Louis County is providing some community block grant funds to the Academy. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Danny, let me begin with you. This is a relatively new project. Is there any kind of a track record yet?
No. We're just beginning our work. As you might imagine, there are a lot of complexities in putting this together. And so for the last year, we've been working with WashU, who is running the Concordance Institute, which is a sister organization led by Dr. Kerry Pettis Davis. And so this really will be the first public-private academic partnership of its kind in the country, and will also be the very first time that you'll have a true integrated, holistic approach to dealing with a lot of the problems that affect this population when they're released from prison. So as you might imagine, the complexity of putting all these things together, I'll give you one fact that's interesting is Concordance Institute has now researched over 100,000 programs across the world, actually having to translate some of these from Spanish to English or Portuguese to English, to find the ones that have the best evidence-based research, and those are the programs that we're going to be implementing into the Academy.
The research into people staying out of prison once they get out.
Programs that are proven to lower recidivism or reincarceration for this population.
I get the impression that we're pretty bad at that.
Well, I would say that most countries, including the United States, are have not had success. And so that problem that you mentioned, Don, right at the beginning, the fact that 77% of individuals who are released from prison in the United States reoffend, recommit a crime within 3 to 5 years, and it's been that way for 30 years without virtually any progress.
How would your program work to try and reverse that?
Well, there are a couple things that are unique about the program. First and foremost, we'll be actually working in the prison, the academy. The services that are offered will be 18 months, starting with services where we'll have our own employees in the prisons that tend to release to the St. Louis community.
It starts in prison.
Right. So the academy is 18 months long. First 6 months is actually in prison. So we'll be able to assess thoroughly, looking at cognitive skills, social skills, some of their talents from a work perspective. And so we'll know this population very well. And so after we do this initial assessment, we'll customize various services that we believe they need. And then when they are released, our program will be 12 months for the total of 18 months. And then there'll be a graduation.
You make an assessment. I gather that some may not cut the mustard and they will not be involved?
No, that's also a very interesting question. What we're trying to do is make sure that we take a representative sample of if you took all the 21 prisons in Missouri and kind of looked at similar factors around this population, we're trying to get a good representative sample. So WashU will actually be the ones, Concordance Institute, that will be interviewing each of these candidates. But we're trying to make sure that bias does not enter into the equation. So we think we'll be oversubscribed, and then they will pick both the number of people going to be in the academy as well as a randomized control group of an equal number, and we'll track the randomized control group for 5 years. And then they'll be tracked against our program, which is kind of the platinum standard in evidence-based research.
To see what works and what doesn't work,
exactly,
I assume.
Exactly.
Steve, what is the county's interest in this in particular?
You know, my interest in it came from initially meeting with Danny and hearing about the program and hearing what he's talked about this morning. And we have federal funds available that I can allocate to a project like this. And the real interest comes from really the data. Missouri releases 20,000 prisoners annually. 4,000 of those prisoners are released to the St. Louis area annually. They struggle with extraordinarily high rates of substance abuse. 72% of them do not find full-time work. About half of them who do not have their GED return to prison within 2 years, which means they've reoffended, which is, you know, of course, crime in our community. Their rate of homelessness is 4 to 6 times higher than that of the general population. So for some real obvious reasons, this became and is very important to me. And there's another key demographic. 48,000 Missouri children have a parent in prison. And those kids of those parents are 6 to 9 times more likely to wind up in prison themselves, and that's staggering. So that's where the interest is really comes from. It's an interest in really there's a public safety component. There is an economic development component. There's an inclusion component. I mean, there are so many things that touch our community in so many ways, and that's why it's so important to me.
You've just outlined in my mind a formula for disaster.
It is.
All of the things that you've mentioned.
It is. And the work that Danny is doing – and, you know, frankly, I hope others join the cause as well, and I hope his program grows as large as it can. Initially, I've dedicated $300,000 of our federal funds to this on an annual basis for 3 years, and, you know, we'll see how everything goes, but I would anticipate us funding it into the future as well. It's very important work.
Danny, what kind of money do you need to make this thing go?
So when I talk about the public-private academic partnership, we have funded the academy for 3 years. We've raised $10 million through both public and private funds. And Steve, County Executive Stanger, obviously being a huge supporter of this initiative. But the City of St. Louis is an investor. The St. Charles County is an investor. And the state is an investor, as well as pretty much every single organization on civic progress, as well as a lot of very generous philanthropic individuals. So the goal here is to, even though the services that we're offering have been proven to lower recidivism, there's never been a program that's done it integrated and comprehensively as we have. So we want to build a track record over the next few years. And our goal is to lower recidivism by a third. So right now, if 10 people come out of prison and 7.7 return, we believe we can cut that number to 4.5, maybe 5. And then once we build our track record, the goal is to take this from St. Louis to other parts of Missouri and then eventually nationally through a pay-for-performance contract with the state.
Steve, there's a cost-saving component here, I assume. We're talking a lot of money to get this ball rolling, but the people who are out on the street and do something to cause them to go back mm-hmm. are costing society and government something.
It is. It's an approach that is needed for those reasons. You know, if you think about it from the public safety component, first, there's a crime prevention component. The investigation of those crimes costs money. The patrolling the streets costs money. When we talk about homelessness, taking care of our homeless costs money. When we talk about the children who are 6 to 9 times more likely to wind up in prison, that's just more prisoners in prison. There is a massive cost component, and that's a component that has not been calculated fully, but I'm sure an economist will hopefully look at that. But this program prevents that. And I think that's why it's so important. And I think that, as you said, there is an upfront cost to getting it moving. But once it's moving, I think that it eliminates many of those costs. And so it's truly an investment. It's not an expenditure of federal funds. It's an investment.
There does seem to be a trend today to take a closer look at the penal system, if you will. The president is looking at it. Various states are looking at it. people are learning, it would seem, that it costs an awful lot of money to put somebody away.
And we're doing it in St. Louis County even, in our jail. And I think Danny visited there recently. I just secured a $500,000 federal grant from the Department of Labor, and we're going to establish a job center in the jail that's going to provide incarcerated offenders with job skills prior to their release. And that is another program that can be interfaced with Danny's program as well in some ways. And there's also some other grants that we're making attempts at and that we have received already. We have a MacArthur grant that is all about incarceration of the seriously mentally ill, substance abuse offenders, and even bonding practices. So it's something that, as you said, is being looked at every level. And Danny's program is fantastic.
Danny, what got you into this? I mean, you were doing something quite different for most of your adult life, and now you're doing this. What pointed you in this direction?
I didn't have any family member that had ever been to prison. Really didn't know much about this population at all. It all started from receiving a letter from Candace O'Connor, who was the chairperson of a small but very effective organization in St. Louis called Project COPE. And it was in my second meeting with her that I learned of what I'm calling the big problem. It was more of a kind of a disbelief that this large a population, and there are over 100 million people in the country that are directly affected by mass incarceration.
That's a third.
So we've talked about it being the third largest social issue this country faces today, not on some opinion, but if you just look at the sheer number. Poverty would be number one, disease would be number two, and mass incarceration would be number three. So that's what got me involved with it initially. I wanted to – and I agreed to put together a strategic plan. But once I spent time with this population, once I spent time with people who had been incarcerated, moms and dads, sons and daughters – this is a broad-based problem. It's not something that just affects the lower socioeconomic class. It isn't a problem that just faces one part of, our racial component in this country. It affects everybody. That's when the compassion started, and I believe strongly that if you don't really have compassion, it's very hard to sustain action. And so when I met with Steve the very first time on this, that's what I saw, because Steve was a public defender for many, many years, and he got this like that. And until you have a tender heart for this population that goes through so much, I mean, Steve said they're struggling with substance abuse, they're struggling with mental health, and they're all struggling from prejudice. They all have a big F on their forehead. They're all felons. And I've said a couple times that if you look up in the dictionary the definition of an ex-felon, you won't find it. The word doesn't exist because you're felon for life. And so we're trying to provide services, thoughtful, well-educated, well-researched services that can truly help this population, because the second largest or the second fastest growing cost of every state in America is the cost of incarceration, just behind Medicaid. That's a staggering figure. So when you mention Steve about the cost of this, he gets it, and we want to do something about that.
Right. We have to take a break now. You've just been hearing from Danny Ludeman of Concordance Academy. That's a program that is designed to help people who have been or who are incarcerated readjust to life on the outside, if you will. He is with me in studio, as is Steve Stenger, the St. Louis County executive who was heavily involved in this from an emotional point of view and also from a financial point of view as far as the county is concerned. We'll continue our conversation. If you'd like to be a part of it, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send me an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd prefer to send a tweet, we'll take that at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our conversation with Danny Ludeman of Concordance Academy and Steve Stenger, St. Louis County Executive. Danny, let me come back to you. You said that this is a situation that affects everybody, but it seems to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that disproportionately it affects the poor and blacks and browns. Isn't that true?
There are more percentage-wise, yes, African-Americans would be more affected by this but mass incarceration than other racial components of the population.
What does that tell you?
Well, I think a couple things. I think, one, that the socioeconomic impact of being raised and located in inner cities. It also shows a little bit of what Steve mentioned about the children. There are 10 million children in this country that have one parent in prison and the odds of that person going to prison. And so if you live in a neighborhood where there are not many role models of people, or you don't have the family support of the family unit, that contributes to it. There's also, I think, when it comes to racial profiling, I think that sometimes occurs with individuals. I think we're all guilty of maybe of being more focused on our own experiences. When people don't look or act like us, there may be some factors that are involved there. But it when you look at the total population, it really doesn't discriminate against. I mean, there are a lot of people that are college educated that are in prison. There are a lot of people who have grown up in wonderful families that are in prison. And so it's hard to make a sweeping statement that applies to every single person. And one that that I like to point out to people is you can have the best environment, you can have the best parents, you can have just a wonderful, loving, nurturing support system. And that doesn't mean that there is sin in the world. And I like to quote that in the Old Testament, when there were four people on the planet, Adam and Eve and their two sons, mm-hmm. Cain and Abel, one was a murderer. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't because they lived in poverty. It wasn't because they were, of a certain race. It wasn't because they didn't have nurturing parents. There's just, so it's across the board, and that's why it's important not to have this solution that tends to focus on a one-size-fits-all. You need to be mm-hmm. customized. You need to take in differences. Probably the highest correlation to crime, the experts that really know the space would identify, is trauma. So people that have suffered severe trauma in their youth, that's the highest correlation to committing a crime of anything. And that doesn't just, again, focus on one particular part of the population.
That brings to mind something that, Steve, I'd like to raise with you, because a lot of eyebrows were raised recently with publicity that you had sent a letter asking for leniency for the nephew of a county employee. Mm-hmm. Sorosino, was that the name?
That's right.
Yeah. And people were wondering if this is appropriate for you to do that. I bring that up with the issue of disparity, because mm-hmm. some of the people that Danny's just been talking about don't have the luxury of having a contact like yourself to write that kind of a letter.
Sure. And I think it's important to note in that instance, the contact was not born out of some, untoward political connection. This was a person who worked for me that I had employed. So it was very simple for him. And I understand. But, I will tell you that we have hired individuals in St. Louis County that are of all races and all backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And it would have been just as easy for any one of them, if I had known their children, and I do know some of their children, to write a letter for them. And I would have written that letter for any friend who was faced with that situation, and particularly where the defendant in question had cooperated with authorities and had assisted law enforcement in their case. So it really was a case-by-case analysis for me. And I wrote that letter, and I will tell you that I've written hundreds of briefs as an attorney that was similar to that, where the government had asked for a sentence, and in this case, the government had asked for a sentence below the mandatory minimum because of the cooperation that the individual had given. And that is indicative of some of the things that we're talking about. Yeah. When you talk about recidivism, you're going to have a lower recidivism rate in those individuals who have cooperated with law enforcement because they certainly won't be returning to commit those same type of crimes with those same individuals because they've now assisted law enforcement. It's known that they've assisted law enforcement.
No problem with Chief Belmar writing a similar kind of letter?
You know, I don't. And once again, he wrote his letter consistent with law enforcement. The prosecutor on the case filed a motion asking for a sentence below what in this case was a 5-year mandatory minimum. And the judge ultimately made her determination. And this is a lifetime appointed federal judge from a completely different system. And I can tell you that outside of a character reference, these letters were probably, you know, with respect to her decision, I mean, they were probably given very little weight in her mind as she made her decision. But they were character letters that went along with many others who knew the Saraceno family. And I've known their family for over a decade. And I came to know the defendant in that case because he was a waiter for me at the restaurant. Right. And so I got to know him over the years.
Any problem with any of that?
And had represented him as an attorney.
Really? Yeah. Any problem with any of that from your point of view?
I wish more people would do that. I think that justice, you know, I think it's important to keep in mind that justice is not just a relational concept, right? It's not just this abstract legal concept that's out there. Proper justice is twofold. Yes, there need to be consequences for committing a crime, and you know, the punishment has to equate to that crime. But justice also has to do, in its complete sense, with healing of wrongdoers and their restoration to the community. And I think, you know, I commend Steve and others for taking the time to get involved in helping somebody, and I think we'd be a better community if that happened more often.
Well, putting that case aside, are we just incarcerating too many people? Again, I go back to my comments earlier with regard to there's a movement afoot to change that and just not to put everybody away that has committed any kind of a crime.
Don, I think the biggest learning for me in doing this research early on is that the reason that our prisons are at historic high levels today, right now in Missouri, is a twofold factor. One has to do with some of the tough-on-crime legislation that was passed, but far and away, the biggest component, bar none, is the fact that it doesn't matter whether you have a 1-year sentence, a 5-year sentence, 10-year sentence. If you're going back in 3 to 5 years, that needs to be addressed. And that's one of the reasons why you know, we wanted to come on to your program, because people are missing that fact. So that one of my worries is that, and I believe we've tilted too far in the tough on crime, and we need to be more reasonable about it. But when you hear about this initiative of letting people out of prison, you know, lowering sentences, things like that, what we need to be careful about is there is hard and fast evidence, especially in California, that faced that and released a number of individuals because of the crowding situation, they're nonviolent offenders, only to find 1 year later that their prisons were more crowded because of the reoffending. So if you release these people, these individuals, and you don't give them any support, and as Steve said, when they're dealing with substance abuse, mental health, a lot of them may have poor education, and everybody's dealing with the stigma, it's hard to get a job, then you haven't solved the problem. You need to address both issues.
Got it. Let's take a couple of calls, and we'll start with James calling from St. Louis. James, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Hello, James. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, Hello? Please. Go ahead.
Yes. I recently moved back to St. Louis from New York City, and while living in New York City, I worked at a substance abuse treatment program that was an alternative to incarceration. And during that time, I got involved in many of the programs that New York State had for people who had been incarcerated. And one thing that New York State did was, in substance abuse treatment programs, they had vocational education in there. And all of the people who were participating in the program had to go through vocational classes. We taught them things. They had to work on getting their GED. There was no treatment without a vocational component to assure that they would be able to gain employment. And there were also other programs that New York State had, like a certificate of good conduct and a certificate of rehabilitation that could help people say that they had been rehabilitated and could move forward.
James, let me ask you, because we have a time consideration here, did the program work?
Yes, it did. New York State actually did a study and found that the higher level of education attained reduced the recidivism rate in a positive correlation.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Well, Danny and Steve, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. And I think that's exactly
validates,
the point.
Validates the program.
And you've heard similar things from other places. You did some due diligence before going into this project, I'm sure.
Yeah. But I mean, education and job readiness in our program starts in the 6 months pre-release. And when they come out, what's also a little different about our program is we are establishing our own employment agency, so everybody that is released from prison on day one will have a job at a living wage with us. And so the gentleman that just called in, I couldn't agree with him more. It's so very important to have the tools and the training to get not just employment but to establish a fulfilling career.
Yeah, and I saw it firsthand as a public defender. Yeah. The recidivism is startling. It really is. And the reasons are for all the things we've been talking about.
We have some emails here. I'll get some quick hit answers, if I may. Does Concordance Academy include any advocacy work to change the laws with regard to felons?
So a big part of – so I mentioned the academy, which I'm running, which is a service provider. You have Concordance Institute. And the answer to the question is yes. One of the functions of the Institute, one of its four, is public policy. And so they will be researching. There are about 4,500 laws in the state of Missouri alone, 45,000 nationally, that affect reentry. So whether it's housing, employment, child care. And so the Institute will be researching and looking at those public policy decisions that have been made that have the greatest impact on making it very difficult for reentry, and then after that, we'll take those and work hard on changing those particular regulations.
Another question here: have you hired any ex-offenders for the Concordance Academy project?
Today, we have three people that are part of Concordance Academy that are formerly incarcerated individuals.
Out of a staff of
seven. How many?
Almost half. Yeah. Would sex offender felons be in the program? I think those people have a tougher time adjusting, according to the writer.
It's a great question. So we'll be taking three classes initially, 60, 80, and 110 over about a 24-month period. And we will eventually be taking sex offenders. That's our goal. There's no prejudice on our part. We want to help all. But you do need to make sure that – or we need to make sure we have the full array of services that are dedicated to this population. So I would say somewhere in the second or third year we will.
Who would be disqualified from your program for getting into the program?
So there are really two. The first one is we will not be admitting psychopaths into the program, and that's based on testing results, and that's not necessarily only related to the fact that they're not able to be rehabilitated, because I think all can, but they show a certain disruption to the classes that are involved. So that will be one. The other one is people that suffer from serious mental illnesses, SMIs, that are not treatable. In other words, they're not either regularly attending therapy or some type of prescription, where they can't function in the academy. We will not take those individuals. But other than that, It'll be everyone.
We have a caller. I can't take the call because of time, but he wants to – he is wondering about whether part of the problem is that some people might prefer to stay in jail than go out back out on the street. That is some of those who return.
Yeah, that I think is one of the biggest myths that is out there, probably from watching movies like Shawshank Redemption and things like that. Nobody wants to go back to prison, no matter what age you are. And it's that's we have a list of about 10 mythbusters that we try to get out there, and that's one of them.
You have a website people can go and find out more about this?
Yes, Concordance Academy.
We'll put a link to it on our website.
That'd be great.
Folks are not poised with a pencil right now,
okay,
in the most part. We'll put a link.
Please
on
do.
It. Steve, a final thought from you?
No, thank you. I just thank you for having us, and I think that this is a really important initiative. And St. Louis County, as well as I'm sure I can't speak for the other governments surrounding St. Louis County, but we're all participating because it's a great step for our community.
I want to thank you both so much for being here and telling us about it. Danny Ludeman and County Executive Steve Stenger talking about Concordance Academy.
Coming up,
we'll be talking about Kids in the Middle. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.